So employment adaptations can be billed through supported employment, supervision, transportation, like I said, which is a big thing in Texas because we have a big state. We have a big state with different areas. Sometimes folks in the rural areas have to drive an hour for employment opportunities. So transportation is a really big deal. And so the fact that we figured out the VR and employment assistance thing, that we'll probably see the numbers start to increase. We're crossing our fingers. The pass deal kind of, it kind of made me sad, I'm going to say, but it's okay. So remember I said shelter workshop is not included in this, okay? So a provider cannot bill employment services if somebody is being transported, for example, to a shelter workshop setting. That's not considered competitive integrated employment. So shelter workshop settings do not fall under the service that is covered, okay? you can't bribe people to work. You guys know it's frowned upon and it is illegal. So bribing an individual to work or bribing an employer to hire people with disabilities to work is a no-go. It will not be covered. You can't cover that through employment services. So the state did do a good job about thinking all of the loopholes that could come up, right? So how does it work? Who is kind of involved in this process of getting employment services added? Well, there should be a lot of people, and there are a lot of people. Does everybody know who needs to involve? No, not yet, but we're getting there. So how it starts is, you know, there's a team of people who are coordinating services, and you guys as attorney are probably and should be involved in this if you've got somebody on a waiver. So it is good for you to know this information on how things should be done and who's responsible for what. The service coordinator initially at the local authority level has a big job. Okay, they do have a big job as far as making sure that an individual's voice is heard and that their plans are written with the supports that they need. It's the provider's job to implement things that are on the plan. Okay, now how VR comes about, well, when we're talking about employment, they are the first stop. So if somebody says that they want to work, the VR are the people that we call first to say, hey, this person wants to work. What do we need to do? And they'll take it from there. However, if we need transportation, that needs to be discussed at that meeting, okay? That needs to be discussed because that's something that the service coordinator is going to have to very detailed write. It's got to be detailed strictly for transportation during this time, okay? I'm seeing some nods. I hope it's making sense. I know I'm going super fast. The waivers can be a little confusing. But just think of waivers as a menu of services. Think of waivers as long-term supports and services. When I say long-term supports and services, vocational rehabilitation, they're very short-term, okay? But if somebody needs long-term support, that is where the waivers come involved, okay? That is how the waivers can help. Now, does everybody have a waiver? No. Is the interest list long? Extremely. It's extremely long. I don't think any new slot, I don't know how many years it's been since slots have been added to the interest list, but that's what we're up against, is that the interest list to receive a waiver is extremely long. So some people you have may have heard them refer to it as a golden ticket. It kind of is, because it opens the door for individuals with intellectual disabilities to an array and menu of services, okay? So making sure that their Medicaid is active is a big, important factor when we're talking about if they are on a waiver, because if their Medicaid is impacted, that will impact their waiver, okay, and the supports that they're able to get. So this information is very important for a lot of people to kind of know, especially on the team. You guys may have the information now and get invited to a meeting and be like, wait, they're on a waiver? You'll know what that means, okay? We've got some parents that don't even know what their kiddos are receiving, okay? And we've had that kind of come up before. Are they on a waiver? Do they receive SSI? And parents will flat out say no, because they just don't know. They just don't know, okay? Now, who can provide employment services? These are the service provider qualifications to be able to provide employment services. You can see it doesn't require much, okay? And this is probably my favorite one because we think about high school kiddos, and we've got a class of, 2018 that just graduated. They're probably looking for some work, and they could probably do a little part-time gig with a provider to provide some employment services, and they might stay with the company and keep growing with the company, okay? So the high school one kind of often gets overlooked when we're talking about employment services because they automatically want to be like, we need an employment specialist who's got a bachelor's degree and who can, you know, get this up and running. Want to look outside the box, okay? Sarah, look, y'all made it on here. Because remember, I said they are the first stop when we're talking about employment services. If somebody says, hey, I want to work, we're going to ring up VR and say, y'all, this is a federal law. We've got to reach out to you guys first. They're going to do their thing, determine eligibility, and then we'll move on from there. Okay? If they're eligible for services, like I said, they're going to go through their process. But remember, VR is short term. Okay? At benchmark 5 is where we want to pull the group all back together and say, okay, what support do they need to maintain their job? If they're still needing job coaching after VR has pulled away, then that is where the waiver provider comes in and needs to be able to provide that supported employment, okay, the job coaching. And they can bill it through supported employment.